A year ago, my father passed away, and he had some, you know, nice wood guns. And my brother and I, we kind of went through them, and he had bought a new Winchester XPR and got a nice scope on it and everything. He'd only bought that about 5 years ago. And neither of us wanted that gun because it was just kind of that modern type gun. Not that it's a bad gun, but the gun that we both wanted was his beat up old 30-06 and his old shotgun. And so both guns were wood, both guns were beat up, and they don't maybe function as good as a brand new gun, but those ones were the ones that told a story that we could remember our dad hunting with as we were kids. And, you know, they were scratched up and beat up, but that's what we both wanted. So
Winchester Repeating Arms isn't just a gun manufacturer. They're the heart and soul of the American hunting and shooting heritage. Each gun they assemble is not only exceptionally well built and trusted, but it's poised to become an heirloom passed down from generation to generation with stories to tell. The legendary Horse and Rider brand is not only firmly cemented in American culture, but it's driven to keep up with the demands of present-day gun enthusiasts. In this episode, we'll sit down with Ryan Swanner from Winchester Repeating Arms and dive into what it takes to build a gun from concept to completion. We'll also talk about the history of the brand and some of the most collectible Winchesters from the past, and look ahead at some of the biggest trends in the market and what they're doing to not only keep up with them, but to lead the way. I'm your host, Jason Brown, and welcome to this week's episode of the Winchester Life Podcast. Welcome to the Winchester Life Podcast. Through insider access to industry pioneers, first-hand looks at cutting-edge tech advancements, and the stories behind the scenes that have shaped the world of shooting sports and hunting as we know it, we'll dive into the sacred places like deer camps and duck blinds, talk about innovation and shooting tips with the world's best, while revisiting age-old traditions of hunting and shooting still alive in our country. I'm your host, Jason Brown, and welcome to the show. The Winchester Life Podcast is brought to you by Winchester Ammunition, Winchester Repeating Arms, Winchester Safes, White Flyer Targets, Folds of Honor, Birchwood Casey, Walkers, Winchester Pet, and Winchester Optics. All right, welcome to the Winchester Life Podcast. With me today is Ryan Swanner from Winchester Repeating Arms. How you doing, man?
Doing good. You?
Oh, great. Great. Yeah, I know.
Good to be here.
Yeah, we chatted at the SHOT Show, and you know, obviously there was a lot of, you guys are busy at the SHOT Show. You've got lots of things that you're handling, questions. What can you, from a, now that it's been a couple weeks past, how was it for you? Was there anything promising that came out of it, or, you know, was it a good show for you guys?
No, I think it was very good. I think there was a lot of excitement. You know, we just had the election that had just taken place coming in the SHOT Show. There was a lot of excitement around that, kind of the future. People were very optimistic with kind of where the economy was going. And so orders were really good. Our products were received very well. We had several new products that we offered at SHOT Show. And then just, yeah, I think the overall market that I'm feeling right now is pretty good and pretty positive coming out of SHOT Show.
Yeah, that's good, man. So at the SHOT Show, what's your main objective at Winchester Repeating Arms from the gun standpoint? Are you taking orders there, or how's that work?
We do. It's actually one of our biggest order writing periods that we do with our dealers. And so we always, every year, come up with some special guns that will be SHOT Show specials that are guns that you won't see in our catalog, or that you won't see necessarily all the time, but stuff that people can come in, they can buy, maybe some special configurations. And then a lot of times we launch some of our new products, whether it's a new caliber, a whole new firearm. Yeah. And so there's always a lot of excitement around SHOT Show at the Winchester Repeating Arms booth. And yeah, it was a great, this year we had the 21 Sharp on the Expert, that was brand new. We also had several configurations of XPRs that are brand new this year that you may not see again in the future. We'll kind of see how things play out, but a lot of times we like to give these special products a time that, you know, dealers can come in, they can order them, and they may not be able to get them again. So, yeah.
So if you break those down, if I'm at home and I'm like, oh, I love Winchester guns, like I want to buy one of those special run. What are they? Where can they get them? Is it possible to still buy them?
For sure. Yeah. A lot of times the dealers will just buy them without having a back order for them. And so you can either call us here at Winchester. We can tell you what our main dealers are, or just go into your local gun shop and tell them what you want, what you're looking for. And then a lot of these local guys buy direct right from us. And if they don't buy direct right from us, a lot of them will buy through distribution. We've got a lot of great distribution partners that carry these guns. And so if you're wanting one of the SHOT Show specials, it's best to get in there, you know, pretty early in the year to make sure you get one of those, because some of them are limited runs. And so get in now, get in early, get those orders in. And then we build those guns throughout the year. Some of these SHOT Show specials we do carry over year to year. An example of that is our Winchester Model 70 in maple and French walnut. Those have just continually done really well. We haven't been able to keep up with the demand on those. And so year after year, we continue to offer those just so that someone doesn't lose out on getting one of those guns.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for the specialty woods and stuff, we'll get into a little bit of how you guys select that stuff later. But backing up, what's your role at Winchester? How long have you been there?
Okay, so my role right now is the product manager of Winchester Repeating Arms. So basically all the firearms that Winchester offers currently. I've been at the company about 8.5 years. I've kind of moved my way up the corporate ladder here. Started as a credit manager and then moved over as an assistant product manager for a few years, and was then also the supply chain manager over the firearms. And then about 3 years ago, I moved into the role as product manager.
Okay. So as things progress, what's from a product manager standpoint, what's the next level for you? Like what's your goal within Winchester?
You know, my goal, honestly, just being at the company, I'm living a dream right now. I can honestly say that this is a dream job, product manager of Winchester Repeating Arms. It's pretty cool. But obviously just be more involved with the guns, just continue to grow. Obviously there's maybe some management positions above me, my boss, you know, but really where I'm at right now, it's awesome. Like yeah. I'm helping grow the Winchester name, the modern, you know, Winchester. And there's only, you know, a few of us here on the Repeating Arms side that get the opportunity to do that. And it's a pretty special, I don't know, it's a cool job. So yeah, obviously in the future, I'd like to move up maybe to my boss's role, but right now it's awesome. I'm living the dream.
Yeah. I think that's the same thing that I've heard over the years with anyone who works at Winchester Ammunition, Winchester Firearms, Repeating Arms. I mean, it is how you're treated. It's, you feel honored to be in the position that you are. And they treat you great too. And it's a family oriented atmosphere. And what I've seen in the history is just great people working there. And yeah, it's a testament to, I think, what they've built as a brand, and also the people that it attracts, like yourself. You know, I know you just from past conversations, you're an outdoorsman. You love to hunt. It's part of your family upbringing, right?
Correct. Yeah. And like you're saying, this place is just a family. You know, I hunt with a lot of the guys I work with. We go out on our own personal time, spend time in the outdoors. But yeah, I grew up in a family that hunted. I grew up not far from the office here, out in the country on a little dairy farm. And my dad from a young age would take me and my brother hunting, whether it was deer hunting, duck hunting, elk hunting. And so coming up, you know, we were very family oriented, especially being on a dairy farm. Everyone had to, you know, pitch in here and there to make things work. And, you know, it's awesome. And then coming to work for a company like Winchester, it's great. I've had, you know, the last few years, we've had a little family issues, and you know, a lot of the people here at the office have stepped in. They always are watching your back. It's like a family, like you were saying.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Pretty cool.
I love that. So kind of to, let's go to the beginning of a firearm design. What's step one? I know there's a million processes, but what goes into the design process in the beginning, and how's that kind of translate all the way through?
Yeah, so it's a several year process. And so step one is kind of just, you know, myself, maybe our sales manager, kind of looking at what the market trends are doing, what the market's doing, what we have currently in our lineup, and then maybe something that we're missing. And so we can come up with some ideas. We look at the, you know, some competitors or stuff like that, and then just come up with a plan. Okay, we want, let's use the Winchester Ranger. That's our newest model that we've launched. It's a lever action 22. It's something that Winchester had 20 plus years ago in the 9422, but currently we did not have a lever action 22 rimfire.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, started doing some market research, looking at, you know, what other people are doing, and then come up with a plan of, okay, it's got to do this, it's got to do this. And then we've got to hit certain price points, things like that. And then it just goes into the development. We give our ideas to our research and development department, who's here in Morgan, Utah as well. And they go to work and they make the gun, they make prototypes. And then after that, we make a full drawing package. And sometimes we don't know exactly which factory this gun's going to go to. And so we make it so that, you know, depending on whether we go to our Portugal factory, our Turkey factory, our, you know, our one in Japan, anybody could take these drawings and make that gun. And so it's fully designed, fully developed here in the U.S. And then we take it to a factory and then them start quoting it. And they, you know, we do a bunch of different testing along the way. But it, like I said, it's several years in the making. This isn't just something that we think of overnight, come in and we have it in a few months.
It's, yeah.
This can take up to a couple of years.
So let's take the 6.8 Western, for example. That was a beautiful Browning Winchester collaboration. And I think that's probably one of my favorite projects we've been a part of. But from behind the scenes, how did that start, the 6.8 Western? How did you guys say, hey, there's a market for this? Or what was the objective when you guys, you know, kind of designed that firearm?
Yeah. So first off, the ammo guys came to us and they had this idea of a new, you know, short magnum cartridge. And they came to us gun guys, both the Browning guys, the Winchester team, and said, hey, we want to put this in your rifles. We want to come out with something new. They actually had a couple different names for it. It wasn't originally 6.8 Western. It was something different. But, you know, a couple years in development, we got some ammunition from the ammo guys, loaded up, tested them in our guns, and we came up with a great product. And so we launched that, I guess it's been 3 years ago or so.
I think it was, you know, Browning did 2019, I think. It was before COVID, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, 2019. I think 2019 was our 350 Legend. That was a massive launch as well. And then it might have been 2020 or 21.
Oh, so it was 6.8. A 2021 launch, I think. 2020 was the production side of things. It was in field first time in 2020, correct. I believe. Yeah.
You are correct. And then 21, because I killed a mule deer in 21. It's not up here. But I killed a mule deer in 21 with 6.8. And it was still, I think, it had just been launched. I was using an XPR. And, but no, it was cool. It was cool development. It was a good team effort between, you know, the gun side, the ammo side. And we came up with a plan and launched. It was great. It was a big success. It's been good on both the Browning side, the Winchester side. And it was a cool collaboration between the two brands.
Yeah. So when you guys come up with the concept, you know, in that specific situation, ammunition came to you guys. Who sits down at the table next? Is it the designers, the engineers, how's that work?
Yeah. So like on the ammo side, they had their ideas and they had their engineers that were kind of, you know, making the case, making the bullet types, testing aftermarket or other bullets from other companies. They were doing all the work on the ammo side. Our engineers then sat down and said, okay, what do we need to do to make the gun function with this? It's using this case. Do we need a new bolt or can it use an existing bolt? What do we have to do to the barrel? Obviously it's going to have to be rechambered, a new chamber. And on some of our guns, because the 6.8 is similar to the short magnums, we were able to take the same bolt, same magazine, things like that, and then just do a barrel change. So the development of the 6.8 wasn't too difficult on the firearm side. It was more just a barrel change, and then we run through our testing, make sure that works, make sure it hits accuracy specs, things like that.
Yeah. No, that was probably one of my favorite projects that we worked on. And not to mention that the 6.8 is just a wicked, wicked round. I used it, it was 2020. And it was the, now that we started talking about it, we had a Kansas deer camp, and I shot a great whitetail with it, and it never moved. Like, it's rare that you shoot a whitetail with a rifle, really, honestly, that it just, you know, you put it down. It wasn't a high shoulder shot either. So, you know, it's just one of those things, and that doesn't happen every time, obviously, but it just the energy that sucker has, and the capabilities to shoot at distance is pretty incredible.
No, it's become one of my favorite rounds. Like I was saying, back in 2021, we'd already launched it. It was the first thing I had killed with it was a mule deer. That same year, my wife took the same gun and shot a cow elk with it, and it performed flawlessly. The very next year, I took the antelope behind me and took a whitetail in Texas with it.
Yeah.
Then the following year, took a whitetail in Missouri. That was 23. And then the buck over here, the Euro mount there, I shot this year. In 2024 with the 6.8 Western. Yeah. So it's become one of my favorite rounds. It's my go-to. I've got a left-handed XPR that's all, you know, perfectly sighted in. It shoots great. So it's kind of my go-to gun now.
Well, Ryan, now I know why you like the job so much. You just rattled off 8 big game animals that in the last 3 years,
Like I said, it's a dream job.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. We'll chat a little bit about the last couple of years in Missouri here down the road. So there's probably conflict. I shouldn't say conflict. What is the balance when you look at the tradition of Winchester with innovation, but you have new design models that you're looking at? So you have to kind of keep in, I guess, some tradition in the design, right?
Sure. We have to, yes. There's things like the Model 70. We're not going to go update the Model 70 to some, you know, brand new gun. People like the Model 70 because of what it is. It's been around almost, I guess, 88 years now. And it's a reason it's been around that long. The design is there. The action is awesome. Controlled round feed, 3-position safety. There's a lot of great features on that gun. So when we look at, you know, innovation, a lot of guys are wanting carbon fiber barrels and carbon fiber stocks. And, you know, the Model 70 would be a cool gun with that stuff. It would be a more modern gun. But I'll tell you, a few years ago, we put a muzzle brake on a couple models of the Model 70. And man, the comments that we heard from consumers were, what are you doing? You're ruining a brand, like a nice legacy gun by just putting a threaded barrel on it. And you know, a lot of guys are going to suppressors and muzzle brakes and things like that. And so when we saw that reception, we're like, oh man, we better be careful with the Model 70. That gun is a legacy.
Yeah.
And I know we talked at SHOT Show, but you know, we sell a lot of wood Model 70s. It's kind of that historic platform. People want it because it's the same gun that their grandpa used. And it works. It's fantastic. And so it's tried and true. So when we're looking at, you know, innovation, we got to be careful. Even with our lever actions, we've got the 73, the 85, the 86, all those, you know, historical rifles that would be cool to have. You know, some people would want a suppressor ready version, a threaded barrel. But at the same time, are you taking away from that legacy, you know, that history of that gun? So, yeah, we look at that. And then we have our newer guns, you know, our Expert, our XPR, our Wildcat. And those are, you know, innovative new guns that are more for your guys that are going out every day, maybe more of a tool that they can put a suppressor on, a muzzle brake. And so they're your more modern guns, I guess. And so we try to separate the legacy from the new modern type guns, if that makes sense.
It does. I've got a Model 70 300 short mag, and it's my favorite rifle. But what is it? You know, what is it that connects people to that rifle? What's so special about that, right? Because it's beautiful, it drives tacks, but is it combination of all that maybe?
You just said it. Yeah, it's beautiful. The woodwork is always really good on Model 70s. The metalwork is great. The action is super smooth. People really like the 3-position safety, the controlled round feed. And, you know, the guns we're building today are probably the best Model 70s ever built. You know, you hear a lot of people start talking about pre-64 Model 70s, pre-64 94s, because back then in 64, Winchester did take away a few of these features from these guns. They went to more of a traditional push feed just because of what the competition was doing at the time. We've gone back, and these new Model 70s are just like the pre-64s. They've got all those same great features. And to argue, they're even better on some things just because of the modern manufacturing techniques that are used. So Yeah, Model 70, people just look to them just because they work and they're accurate, and their grandpa had them, their dad had them, now they want them. So it's, and it'll be around forever.
Yeah. In the wood selection, you know, we talked a little bit about this before, but maybe not for the Model 70, but just wood selection for the stocks in general. What's that process like? In is it an easy process? You know, how's that work?
It's actually very difficult. And so on the Model 70, we have three different wood models. We've got a maple 4A model. We've got a 3A French walnut, and then a grade 5/6 black walnut. And so to hit those specs of wood grade, you've got to have somebody looking at every one of those stocks before they go to the factory. And so as we talked at SHOT, you know, I think it was about a year, year and a half ago, I went out on one of these trips to go look at some of these blanks. We flew in, this our wood supplier had, you know, thousands of stocks ready for us to sort through. And our quality guy has a stamp of approval that he puts on every stock. And we go through one by one and we look at the figure in the stock. We make sure it meets that grade 5/6, if it's black walnut, or that grade 4 maple, or whatever it is that we're grading. We look at it, we look at both sides. And then we also will even outline it occasionally to make sure the factory knows, hey, make sure you mill it this direction to get that grain of wood. And so every wood stock is different from one from the other. It's like a fingerprint, you know, not one is ever going to be the same.
Yeah.
And as we talked at SHOT, the demand of wood guns continues to go up. We can't build enough of these guns. And it's actually becoming very difficult to even get the wood that we need to build these guns. You know, trees that have this kind of figure are older trees. And so as we cut down trees, as, you know, we're making these gun stocks, eventually there's going to be a time that you don't get this high grade wood, or it's going to become very expensive and very difficult to get. And we're already starting to see that on several of the different types of wood.
Yeah.
But no, it's cool. There's a lot that goes into a wood, especially a Model 70 super grade. Every one of those stocks has been hand selected as a blank, and then it goes to the factory. And then occasionally at the factory, if it, you know, we get some stock breakage depending on how the figure was, or it doesn't meet spec. Once you cut it, you might have cut all that figure out of it, and then our factory will then look at it and go, you know what, this doesn't meet spec anymore. And so we do have a pretty big fallout rate as well on our blanks. So not every stock that we pick here ends up making it on a gun if it doesn't end up meeting that grade once it gets to the factory.
Sure. How much wood do you guys go through in a year? Do you know?
It's a lot. Thousands, like several tens of thousands of blanks. You know, and we get wood from all around the world. A lot of our maple comes from the U.S. Our French walnut's actually still here in the U.S. and then our black walnut's here. But we also use Turkish walnut, which is becoming very difficult to get as well, just because of the amount of trees. But we use that on a lot of our products. But yeah, I would tens of thousands of blanks of wood get used just by us every year. And that's not including, you know, all the other gun manufacturers that are doing similar type of wood guns. I do think that, you know, our super grades, we do make sure that they're hitting that high grade. So I do think that right now we have the best wood gun of everybody on the market, especially a production gun. We make sure every one of these meets that spec. And so that if somebody goes out there and buys that super grade, they know that they're going to get something special.
Yeah. Why do you think there's a connection to the wood? You know, and I agree with you. I feel like there's a trend where it's almost coming back. Even some of my buddies that like to buy guns, they're buying wood rifles now. And they're looking at lever actions. What is the, do you guys know why there's that trend's happening right now?
I think it's just, you know, things come and go. And right now I think people are going more traditional. They're looking at, you know, stuff that, you know, their dad had, or maybe they had a long time ago and they're wanting to get that back. And it's maybe more of an heirloom type gun. For a long time, guns really chased the route of a lot of composite stocks and different, you know, they weren't heirloom type guns. They were just more of a tool. And I think people are now kind of like, oh, you know what? I want a gun that I can pass on to my kids, something that's going to last forever, something that maybe tells a story. And, you know, wood stocks don't always hold up the best in conditions. You're going out there, you may drop it and hit a rock, and then you've got a scratch in it. But with that, you have a story. You can remember that elk hunt that you were on when you dropped that gun. Or, you know, I've seen some stocks that have little notches carved into them for every deer you kill with that gun. So I don't know. I think Woodstocks tell a story and they're just more traditional. And I think people are just kind of like wanting to go back to that because I don't know, for a minute there, I think people thought they had to go lightweight or they had to go composite to be able to kill a deer at, you know, a couple hundred yards, but they realized that these wood guns do everything that they need. And if you're sitting, you know, whether you're in Missouri whitetail hunting or in Utah mule deer hunting, you can use a wood gun. There's nothing, they do everything that a composite gun can do. They just might not have the cool factor or whatever.
Yeah. Cool story. I was at NWTF, and you might or might not know this, but Foster Bartholo has a 410 that you guys sent him. He's got 100 notches in that thing now. I think it's 4 years old, and he's been using it for turkey hunting for the last 4 years. He's got 100 turkey kills with that gun, which is insane. But he's like, it's a $2,000 410. You know, I believe it's an over under, or it might be a single shot. I actually didn't even tell him or ask him that. But every successful turkey hunt, he's putting a notch in there and putting like a date on it. And he says it's cool. You know, like you said, it tells a story. And he chose to do that with his wood gun. Well, you can't do that with a you know, different type of synthetic stocks or whatever. It's almost like it's a living, breathing, you know, part of, it's a tool, but it's part of the story.
For sure. No, it's for sure. And, you know, a year ago, my father passed away and he had some, you know, nice wood guns. And my brother and I, we kind of went through them and he had bought a new Winchester XPR. And got a nice scope on it and everything. He'd only bought that about 5 years ago. And neither of us wanted that gun because it was just kind of that modern type gun. Not that it's a bad gun,
right?
But the gun that we both wanted was his beat up old 30-06 and his old shotgun. And so both guns were wood, both guns were beat up, and they don't maybe function as good as a brand new gun, but those ones were the ones that told a story that we could remember our dad hunting with as we were kids. And, you know, they were scratched up and beat up, but that's what we both wanted. So,
yeah. And that's why I think guns are so collectible because they're tied to those stories and those moments, whether you're growing up or whether you shared your first hunts or, you know, your most successful or least successful, whatever that might be. They're kind of like a conduit to the past, and those stories for outdoorsmen are super important. And I think that's, you know, people wonder why do you collect guns? Why do you need more guns? I don't know. I think it's almost hard to explain it. You know, I really do. Stay tuned for part two of this week's conversation. But first, after the break, we'll talk with Winchester's Ben Frank and dive into everything ammunition on our weekly Ammo 101 segment. This portion of the Winchester Life Podcast has been brought to you by Winchester Pet. From the field to the front seat, the trusted name of Winchester has everything you need for the four-legged friend in your life. For all of your pet accessories, visit worldofwinchester.com. Walkers, for all your hearing protection needs, visit walkersgameear.com, the leader in hearing protection. Walkers. Folds of Honor, providing educational scholarships to the spouses and children of fallen and disabled military service members. Honor their sacrifice, educate their legacy. To learn more, visit foldsofhonor.com. This week's Ammo 101 segment is brought to you by Winchester Ammunition, just like it is every week. And Ben Frank is back with us. And, you know, we talk a lot about straight wall and the whole, I guess, the birth of the 350 legend. And a lot of times I think about, you know, for us, we were brought in well along the way of the 350, the progression of that cartridge. Behind the scenes, how did that even come to fruition to think about a straight wall cartridge like a 350?
Yeah, you know, any of these new things that we come out with, it's just kind of, it's cool and crazy at the same time because you bounce a lot of things off the wall and a lot of stuff doesn't stick, right? And oftentimes we're always looking to try to innovate. But with 350, it was one of these deals where we saw the need out there of these straight wall states and their availability or lack thereof of different options. And we thought, you know, there's something we've got to be able to do to be able to help these folks out. There's something that we can do to help create a better product for, you know, the new person coming in who is basically, you know, required to use these, you know, stipulations. And how can we, you know, everything that they were using at that time was stuff that had been around for a long time, or maybe some wildcat stuff out there that had never really been fully established. So we're like, what's been done, but what else could we do and utilize our, you know, current capabilities to really make a great product for the industry?
Yeah. And I think when I think about how it applies to me, I think of taking my son to Illinois or taking my son to Ohio, having to put a 20 gauge slug gun in, you know, in his hands, or a 12 gauge slug gun. Straight wall wasn't an option. I think at the time there was 450 Bushmaster, but it wasn't super readily available, at least to me. And we had slug guns available to shoot. But that was not fun for a small frame guy at the time, a 10-year-old, to go out there and you know, to take a slug to the shoulder, you know, through that 20 gauge. It's just a lot. The 350, in my opinion, was one of the most innovative and game-changing cartridges that you guys had come up with for all of those reasons. Now, I can't imagine a deer season without 350 Legend and the availability that it is to your deer camps. I know in our deer camp, a lot of our younger shooters, even me, I like shooting the 350. It's great to shoot. It's fun to go to the range with, but it's also it's deadly. Talk about just the explosion of 350 and how that kind of has transpired.
Yeah, and you know, I'll go back just a little bit, because to be able to create an explosion like that, you got to get a lot of things right. You have to make sure that, for one, it's something that people want and need, but also it's got to be available. You mentioned availability. Well, that was a key point of our building the design around the 350, was how can we make this the most available, the most efficient, with the processes that we have today. And I remember sitting there in our conference room, and we were kicking around just, okay, here we looked at all of the different, you know, regulations by all these straight wall states. We lined them all up. We started figuring out, okay, what can we physically do? I mean, if you've looked at those stipulations, there's certain things that criteria you have to stay within: the bullet diameters, the shell case length, all those kinds of things. And each state's not exactly the same.
Yeah.
But we wanted to make sure that it would fit for all of those. And once we started laying it all out, it started to become pretty evident that it was like, you know, this is pretty close to a 223 shell case, and it's pretty close to a 9mm bullet, which we are very good at building both of those things. And actually, the industry is very good at building both of those things. So we knew that if we could build something with those kinds of characteristics, we could have a winner, because not only is it going to be fun to shoot and all those other things and work, because we'll make bullets to work for it, but it's also going to have that availability aspect, which has been a very big, you know, key to the success of 350 Legend.
It has. And you know what I think is always cool is I to come up to say that you were sitting in a room around a table and you guys devised a plan to create a new cartridge that would really change how people approach whitetail deer hunting, and even, you know, deer hunting in general. To me, it's wild to think about. It's like guys sitting around and coming up with the sketches of the Camaro. Because what I love about the ammunition world and in the whole hunting space is these are legacy cartridges. It's not going anywhere. It's going to be around for a long, long time. So to be on the ground floor of creating something like the 350 or the 6.8, you know, those are cool things to be associated with.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's one of the things that makes me, you know, appreciate and love what I get to do. But I will say this, because I smiled when you started with that conversation, because, you know, early in my career, I was an engineer, and I still have that engineering mindset, but I also have the luxury of being in marketing now and can just come up with crazy ideas and then ask the engineers to figure it out. Yeah. You know, so like, yeah, we're in a room and we're coming up with crazy ideas, but the next step really is us getting with our engineering team. And there's a lot of back end there that we don't always talk about, or, you know, no one really sees, that has to go into, okay, yeah, we think it's going to be this shell case and this bullet, but there's a lot of things that go into making sure that that's going to feed properly. It's going to be safe. It's going to work on whitetail. Is it going to have enough energy? You know, all of these things, gel testing, I mean, you name it, what it's putting together packages and going to someone like Sammy and making sure that everyone in the industry is, doesn't feel like this is going to be an unsafe or, you know, unbuildable type cartridge. And we got to go through all those processes, and we do when we come up with something new. And you know, our engineering team, we put a lot on them in terms of taxing them with coming up with new ideas and taking our new ideas and, you know, putting them out there. But it oftentimes can take a while to be able to, you know, get through all of those hurdles and make sure we're making the best product we possibly can.
What was a setback that you guys had with 350? Like, when you think about, man, that was our biggest setback, that was our biggest hurdle. Do you remember?
You know, I know a few things, and I might not say 100%, because to this day, I think we're probably the only ones that are still doing some of these things to make sure it works properly. So I don't want to give away too much.
Sure.
But I will say that, you know, when it comes to building new shell cases, it's not just a 223 shell case. I think at first some people thought that was the case, and it definitely is not. You have to definitely do some things to make sure that it's going to work properly. Another part about 350 Legend that I, you know, that it's a mouth breaching cartridge, meaning that it chambers off the mouth of that shell case. That can sometimes be a difficulty, particularly on a rifle. You know, that happens a lot on pistols and stuff, but like on rifles, a lot of times you're chambering off a shoulder. And so there's some hurdles that go into building a rifle that's going to function properly. Another piece of the puzzle that, you know, I can divulge is that when you come up with something like that, that works in MSR AR style rifles, you got to have a magazine that's going to work. Or really, even if it's a bolt gun, those bolt guys, they have to have a magazine that's going to function this thing. And so working with different firearm manufacturers to make sure that their bolts are going to run, or those semi-autos are going to run, that was a big piece of it. Because if you can't get it to function properly, no one's going to like it. Nobody's going to adopt it. It's not going to work. And so that was a big hurdle, was the magazine situation. We don't even make magazines, but you have to recognize when you're in this situation that you have to have all those pieces of the puzzle to make it a success.
Yeah. So talk about some of the products that 350 Legends offered in for you guys.
Yeah. So I think I looked it up. I think we have like 7 different in Winchester products that we have. Anything from a FMJ, 145 grain FMJ, to a lot of hunting loads. So we offer a suppressed version. We have, I think, really our most popular are our deer season and our power point. So that 180 grain power point and the 150 grain deer season, those are really the flagship products, particularly for those who are out hunting. They're highly accurate. They're, you know, like you mentioned, next to no recoil, and the amount of energy and the amount of performance that you're getting out of something like that is, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the first couple deer that I shot with it, you're thinking, after coming from a slug gun state like Illinois, like myself, like just like you, you shoot a 350 and you're like, boy, like, is that going to work? And then you find out that it's like, it works, if not better than what you had. And the accuracy is so much better. Your trigger pulls are so much better. So there's just so many advantages to using a rifle versus a shotgun, that it, you know, it's been cool. But, we also have a Power Max bonded. So that's a, you know, a bonded technology, real tough bullet. That one works great too. And we continue to look at different things. We got the Copper Impact as well. Yep. So the Copper Impact's another 150 grain solid copper projectile, tough bullet. So All of them have been popular, though. I mean, like, we sell a lot of each one of those year in and year out right now, and 350 has quickly become one of our more popular cartridges we build.
Yeah, man, I have great memories of 350. I think we've got, in my family, at least $8 now that are hanging on the wall from 350 Legend. My son, the first year it came out, he shot a buck in Michigan at our deer camp, and then we went to Ohio, shot another buck there, and it's just been a go-to. I shot a buck 2 years ago in Ohio with it, and they don't go far, man. If the placement's right, none of these deer went more than 45 yards. I mean, just in dead or in a doornail. So yeah, man, I'm very glad that you guys sat around that table, because it's probably one of my favorite cartridges that you guys have ever developed, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. When you do those things, you do end up having those kind of memories. You know, it's like, I still remember sitting around that table with the guys and talking through it and looking at bullet boards and looking at what's out there today versus, you know, or then versus what wasn't, and just kind of walking through those. And I remember the first buck I killed with you guys. We were in Kansas.
That's right.
And it was one of the first hunts that we did with 350, which was awesome. And, you know, it's just those little things that, you know, I'm very fortunate to be able to have participated in those kinds of things. But I think the cool thing is, it's like you, me, all of us, we're all like, we're not just people who work for Winchester or, you know, Be Alive. We're people who are passionate about this stuff. And when we're trying to come up with cool new stuff and go out and test it, it's for us too, right? Yeah. It's for us as just hunters, shooters, people. And it's pretty cool when we can come out with cool stuff like that.
Yeah, man. So much passion in the Winchester family. And you know, I'm proud to be associated with it. And I know you are too. And I almost forgot about that. We hosted that Kansas 350 Legend media hunt. And that's the first time I think I met you. And that was in, what, 2018, I think, maybe?
Something. And that was a rodeo, if you remember.
Oh, we had.
The rain and the tornado, and
it was unreal.
I mean, it was something. That's another story, but I mean, that was a really cool hunt. You know, one I'll never forget. So
yeah, we'll get into that another time, but man, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for stopping by. I loved chatting a little bit about 350 today, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jason.
This portion of the Winchester Life podcast has been brought to you by Winchester Ammunition. A world leader in delivering innovative products, Winchester is the American legend, a brand built on integrity, hard work, and a deep focus on its loyal customers. Considered one of the world's leading ammunition manufacturers, Winchester has built its reputation on delivering innovative ammunition products, providing top shelf customer service, and demonstrating industry leadership. To learn more, visit Winchester.com. Winchester Optics. The Winchester Supreme line of optics offers rifle scopes, binoculars, spotting scopes, and rangefinders for all of your shooting and hunting needs. To learn more, visit worldofwinchester.com. Winchester Repeating Arms. The guns that work with a reputation built on reliability. Winchester rifles and shotguns are built tough with superior fit and finish. Winchester firearms are built to exceed expectations. To learn more, visit WinchesterRepeatingArms.com. Coming up next on the Winchester Life podcast is part two of our guest conversation. But first, a few words from our partners. The Winchester Life podcast is brought to you by Winchester Ammunition, Winchester Repeating Arms, Winchester Safes, White Flyer Targets, Folds of Honor, Birchwood Casey, Walkers, Winchester Pet, and Winchester Optics.
Yeah. No, it's just, they do tell a story. And one day, you know, I've got two boys at home, and one day I will pass these guns on to them, and I'm hoping that they have the same connection to them that I do. But I can tell you that these nice, like we were talking wood, some of these nicer guns with the wood on them are the ones that I think they will remember more than just these modern tools that we would call them.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Trends that you've been seeing from an ammo cartridge standpoint, what's selling right now? What's the most popular?
On my demand, 308. You know, yeah. It always comes back around. These brand new, these legacy cartridges always come back. And so, you know, 6.8 was really hot. It's now fallen down a little bit, but every single year you will always have 308, 30-06, 270 Winchester, and 300 Win Mag, and 243. Those five are always, and I can see both Winchester's and Browning's numbers, both those five calibers are always probably top 7 or 8 in our demand every single year. And so right now, 308 is hot. A lot of people attribute that to just ammo availability. Mm-hmm. But it's a great round. It's a, you know, it's a, you know, shoot a whitetail, low recoil, 30 cal bullet. It's a cool round.
Yeah. But
those traditional ones always come back.
So talk about the shocks. Talk about the SX4. The SX4 was released, I don't know, 8 years ago, maybe-ish?
It was released in the sales year of 2017. We released it to our sales reps in fall of 2016.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, coming up on 8 years, or almost 9 years, I guess.
Yeah.
It's an awesome gun. It's full lineup, 12-gauge, 20-gauge. Couple years ago, we came out with the left-hand version, which was the first autoloader that we've had for lefties. And so we've got a full lineup, turkey guns, slug guns, pretty much everything that you can think of we've got on the FX4.
Is there a, I think I know this, but I'm going to ask you, is there a semi-automatic 410 that you guys have available?
We don't have one available. It would be awesome to have one available, and hopefully one day that we can, you know, sub gauges, as you mentioned, they just continue to get more popular. As ammo gets better, sub gauges, you know, get more popular. The 410, the 28-gauge, 20-gauge, they're all, we've seen an uptick in demand. And so hopefully one day in the future, we've got something to help with that market of the sub gauges. Today, currently, we don't have a 28 or a 410.
Yeah, the sub gauges are almost a no-brainer, I think, especially when you have, you know, smaller framed hunters, smaller framed shooters. Makes a hell of a lot of sense.
It does, for sure. Yeah, lighter recoil, and you can still reach out on that turkey or even waterfowl. I hunted waterfowl this year with some TSS, and the guy next to me in the blind was using a 410. Or no, he was using a 28 gauge, but watching him smash ducks with the 28 was pretty cool. And so I don't think, with this new ammo, you don't have to go 12 gauge every time. It's actually kind of fun to shoot a sub gauge just because of the lighter recoil. It's easier to swing, a little bit lighter gun.
Maneuverability,
And it's awesome. So the trends are definitely showing that sub gauges are becoming more popular.
So when you guys have a new firearm, a new cartridge, whatever, a new product, what is the testing in the quality process like? Once you guys get it to that point, what's it look like next? Is it field testing? Is it on the range? Is it running 200 rounds through it? Like, how's that go?
It's a lot of everything. And I don't know how specific I can get with what we do. But we test the guns a lot. And that's one of the reasons it takes us so long to develop a gun, is we go through several steps. We get a prototype made here. We make sure that gun works. We run that through the ringer. We shoot, you know, thousands of rounds through it. We make sure it functions, make sure it's safe. And then we get the drawings made. Then we ask the factory to make us a bunch more guns based on those drawings. And then we go through another test, making sure that those guns work, whether it's field tests, you know, running thousands of rounds through them, making sure they function, making sure they're accurate. And then after that, we start ordering more production parts. And then we run another test, making sure all these guns are good and safe. And we've got a very strict, you know, lineup of tests that we have to do. And every gun has to pass all of these tests before we can take it to market.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes you're right there on the verge of getting a gun to market and something comes up in testing. And we go back to, we got to change the design a little bit. But I can tell you that every gun that we put out goes through a lot, and it's cool. Like, it makes me have a ton of confidence in all my guns that they're not only going to function, but they're going to be safe. They're going to be accurate. And so we stand behind that and make sure that every gun's going to be good that we sell out of here.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's firearm manufacturers that rush the process because they want to be first at the table. And that's not a priority for you guys. The priority is to get it right the first time. And I think that's, that's what makes Winchester stand out, is the quality is number one, and making sure when it comes out, there's no questions. And I think that's what I've seen in the past. And I think just being part of the development behind the scenes a little bit, we've heard about certain new developments that are taking place, but maybe hit some bumps along the road. You want to be the first to release some of this stuff, but sometimes you can't be, for the sake of, just what you guys are known for.
Exactly. And it, as a marketing guy that goes out, it's frustrating at times, but it's also very comforting knowing that my guns for sure are going to function and are going to be safe and will meet the customer's requirements. But yeah, occasionally we are slower to market depending on what it is, just because of these high standards. But we with full confidence can tell you that our guns will live up to the expectations. They will function as you want them to function. They will be safe. They will do everything that you're expecting it to do, especially coming from a brand like Winchester. So
yeah.
I do occasionally, yeah, it does get frustrating, but it's also a good thing. So
why do you think Winchester, from the firearm standpoint, really ammunition too, why is there such a historical and cultural appeal to that brand?
I think it's one of the brands that have been around a long time. It's been around since the 1860s, so over 150 years. And with a brand like that, that's very recognizable. It just lives, it has a legacy.
Yeah.
People have come to know our products. They know the old lever actions. They know some of the guns, Model 12 pump shotgun up to the Model 70 and then several models in between. We've always been around the firearms industry, whether it's ammo or guns. We're a player in it, and we're very recognizable. We've got a very good reputation for reliability, for just great products. And so I think that's why people will look to Winchester as one of the leaders in the industry, is just because we've been there, kind of done that, and we continue to do that today.
Yeah, and continue to lead. And I think that's what's important is that Winchester Horse and Rider, it's a almost 160-year-old brand now, but it represents the past, but it also represents the future. It represents all the technology, all the new innovations. It represents the family that you guys work with within the walls of Winchester. It represents all of that. It represents stories in our families, in the woods and in the on the water every year. So, yeah, it's way more than that. And I think that tie to that brand of Winchester is why people hold it up so highly. Regard it so highly.
Agree completely. Yeah.
So collectors, I mean, that's obviously we talk about historical guns. There's a whole collectible aspect to Winchester guns. What's the most sought after gun, Winchester gun? Do you know?
I know the pre-64 guns are always sought after just because of the manufacturing processes. But if you start looking back into the 1800s, we had several models, the 1866, the 73, 85, 86. There's a lot of models in the 1800s that will be very sought after just because of their age and what they were. Go back to the Model 73, the gun that won the West.
Yep.
I think that gun's very sought after just because of how popular it was back then and how popular it continues to be today. It's a very innovative gun for its time. And people will look for those, and they I don't know. I think people want the historic aspect of the gun to be, an early serial number or a certain year production. But I think that's what they look at first, but then just the quality. And then, like I said, the pre-64 thing I know comes up all the time of people looking for an old Model 70 or an old 94, and they're looking for those specific years just because of that's what they're wanting.
Yeah. So when you're at a show or, maybe people call your facility collectors or, historians, firearm historians, Do you have any stories where someone would come up to you and say, hey, I have this, what's it worth, or anything like that?
All the time. When I go to the NRA show every year, that's the number one question we get is, hey, my grandpa's got an old 94. How much is it worth? And a lot of times I don't know the answer because there's a lot that depends on whether what year it was manufactured and what the condition is. And so there is the Winchester Arms Collector Association. I always refer them to those guys because those guys are experts. They know everything Winchester, whether it was 100 years ago or 50 years ago, they know everything. And there's an expert over there of pretty much every model. And so you can contact them and they will put you in contact with that expert of if it's a 94 you're looking for, there'll be a guy that knows 94 is probably better than anyone in the world.
Yeah.
That wants to talk to somebody, that wants to give them some input. And then there's also the Cody Firearms Museum in Wyoming. They've got a lot of old Winchesters. They've got a lot of knowledge there. And so depending on what the person's looking for, we also refer a lot of customers to the Firearms Museum just so that they can give some information. And I know they do letters of authenticity and yeah. things like that as well up
That's
there.
Cool.
So a lot of times I don't know the answer just because it was way before my time. I've studied up a lot of Winchester, but there's, you know, 160 years of information that of, you know, millions of guns that have been made that I just don't know the answer on a lot of them. And so these experts definitely do.
Yeah. It's kind of like Pawn Stars or American Pickers or, you know, some of these old shows where you're looking at antiques and stuff like that. I'm fascinated by that. I think I've watched every episode of American Pickers ever created. I just love that. Back to the old Antiques Roadshow, stuff like that. Is there does the museum buy if someone called them and had a really historic or a limited or, you know, a unique piece, is that something that they buy and put in the museum or do they, you know, how's that work? Do you know?
It could be. I know that they take a lot of donations. A lot of people want that gun to last forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, money's not something that they're looking for. So they'll donate those guns. I know we've donated a lot of guns up there to them, just historic pieces that we've had here in the building that, you know, deserve to be in a museum. And so I think if someone calls them, they may be interested, depending on what it is and what they're looking at. I think having that historic model in the museum would be cool. But I can't tell you for sure if they would buy. They might.
They'll put you
in contact with someone that wants to buy it, like one of these collectors. I'm sure one of those guys wants to get their hands on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. So what role does storytelling play in the marketing strategy and brand identity for Winchester Firearms?
I think we just tell the story of, you know, we are, I guess, one thing our CEO always says is we're selling heartbeats. And we tell a story of this is a gun you take out into the woods. And it's, you know, whether you're going to hunt with it or shoot trap or sporting clays or just go plink targets, we're telling a story. And it's, I don't know, it's, we like you said, we're family oriented. We want people to get in the outdoors. We want people to use our products, but not only just to go hunt, but to also make memories with others. And so I always like what the CEO says, we're selling heartbeats.
That's great.
Watching your kid shoot their first deer or watching them, you know, shoot a target for the first time. I had my 6-year-old up, or he's seven now. He was six last year up shooting for the first time and shooting these targets at 50 yards was awesome. He had a little scope on his expert and that was a pretty cool experience for me to watch him get that same passion that I had as a kid and start with that. And so I think that's the story we're telling is, yeah, we're not just selling a gun. We're selling what goes with it. We're selling the memories that you're going to make with that gun.
Amen to that. The future. How do you guys plan to continue the legacy that's been built, but also kind of adhere and I guess, adapting to new technologies and demands in the market? I mean, there's a balance there. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but, you know, down the road, I know there's stuff down the pipe for next year and the year after that's in development already. How's that look for the future? How do you guys balance that?
Oh, like we kind of said earlier, or I said, it's, you know, we've got the Model 70, we've got our historic lever actions. We're not going to do a lot to those guns. We're going to try to keep up with the demand and keep making as nice of guns as possible. But as we look at modern technologies, the Ranger is a perfect example of that. You know, we took a gun, the 9422, that was almost overbuilt. It was, you know, a really nice gun. A lot of people love it. One of the best, you know, lever action 22s out there. And we took that design and we used modern manufacturing practices to make it more efficient to build. And so now we're able to offer that gun with the same quality and the same function, same accuracy as the 9422, but at a much lower price. And so it gives us that opportunity to get these guns into people's hands that maybe couldn't afford a 9422. Today is well over $1,000 or even $1,500. Mm-hmm. If we were to make it, we'd probably be in that same, you know, price point. The Ranger is it, I think the MSRP is like 419. And so it uses a billet solid aluminum receiver, fully machined, and aluminum used to be frowned upon. However, we've learned that it's super durable, it's strong, it's easier to machine, it's going to hold up to the elements, and it comes at a lower price. Yeah. And so using technologies like that will continue to shape the future to help us hit, you know, whether it's a certain price point or trying to come up with a new gun, we will use these modern practices of machining and, you know, some of the different technologies of just building stocks, building, you know, everything that goes into a gun. There's a lot of new technology behind it. And I think we will continue to investigate that. And at the same time, keep the legacy, keep the Model 70, keep the 94, the 95, the 92, all those lever guns that are historic that people love, we'll keep those as is and then maybe add to it. Maybe we'll add something a little bit more modern that someone may want to throw a suppressor on or something like that, just to fit in with the current market conditions.
Yeah. I love it, man. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for taking time today. Super informative. You definitely, in your 8.5 years, man, you've built a wealth of knowledge, and you know, I know you're looking forward to a long career right there at Winchester, man. Thanks for stopping by.
It's awesome. Appreciate your time. Anytime, I'd love to, you know, hang out anytime. So thank you.
Right on. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Please make sure you click the follow button on your podcast apps so you never miss a new episode. This episode was produced by Aaron Cox and Jason Gilbertson, engineered by Jason Freer, directed by Chad Andrus, written and edited by Jason Brown, with behind-the-scenes photography by Kelsey Myers. I'm Jason Brown, and you've been listening to the Winchester Life Podcast. See you next time.